your signal has told us we are now on the air, so I call this meeting of the Planning Commission for Tuesday, July 18th to order. We can have a roll call, please.
Commissioner Feller Payne?
Here.
Commissioner Mack?
Here.
Chair Martin?
Here.
Commissioners Shiro and George are absent.
Thank you very much. You can please stand and join me as we recite the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Fellow commissioners wish to review any of the agenda items?
No.
Okay. Hearing none, we'll proceed. Item 5 is the public comment period. It's an invitation to members of the community to present issues, thoughts, and suggestions on matters that are not scheduled on this agenda tonight. Comments should be limited to those matters that are within the jurisdiction of the Planning Commission. And the Brown Act restricts the Commission from taking any formal action on matters not published on the agenda. And we do request that your public comment be limited to 3 minutes and be accompanied by a voluntary submittal speaker slip to facilitate our organization and preparation of the minutes. I have received one speaker slip tonight. I'm going to welcome that individual to the microphone at this point. If there's others that want to speak, they are also welcome to do this afterwards. So Christina Slimak? Slimak. Very good. Welcome. Excuse me, is that microphone on? Is her, she has no light. I just want to make sure that we're all on the same page here.
Okay,
very good.
Start with 3 minutes.
Very good, yeah, thank you.
Okay. Hello, my name is Christina Slimak, and my apologies that my husband couldn't be here. He's actually stuck at work with patients. But we are very active community members and have made Arroyo Grande our home. And we are here for years to come to raise our two young children. And I'm here tonight in regards to the proposed project of merging lots 6 and 7 for an over 12,000 square foot home, which is planned, proposed right next door to us at the Heights of Vista Del Mar. We were actually the first people to purchase land up there over a year ago, and we're extremely excited to find a spot to continue our home here in the village. And although I'm sure they're extremely lovely people, like everybody in our village, a home of this size is just not neighborhood compatible and not suitable. We have extreme concerns regarding the safety, parking issues, noise issues, and lighting of this home. The commercial-size indoor basketball court, the viewing skybox within the home, and 50 feet, roughly, of outside stadium seating all indicate and point to events being held here for several people in our neighborhood. And there are several small children that will be in this neighborhood and are in the existing Vista Del Mar neighborhood. And again, safety is a big concern. Having people coming in and out of this neighborhood that we're not aware of. We have other friends and families that are looking to buy in this neighborhood, one of whom has 6 children, and they're actually holding off on buying to see if this project goes through. In addition, approving the merger of two lots brings up further concern as to what would stop somebody else from coming in and merging, let's say, 3 lots together and building an even larger structure in our neighborhood. We're concerned where the precedent will be set. There are 3 plans now submitted, including ours, which are all roughly 5,000 square feet. I know there has been talk of trying to establish neighborhood compatibility, and now with those 3 plans submitted, we hope that that helps. We have also written a letter, which I don't know if it's okay or appropriate, but we would love to leave it with all of the members. And thank you again for your time and consideration.
And you're welcome to leave your correspondence with us.
Okay.
Just give it to staff so they can distribute it appropriately. Thank you very much. Is there anyone else from the public that wishes to speak on an item that is not on our agenda tonight? Seeing none, we will close the community comment portion of the meeting. Are there written correspondence or any supplemental information that is designed for the planning commissioners tonight?
None this evening.
Very good. Thank you. The next item is the consent agenda. There are two items on the consent agenda. One is the approval of minutes. At our last meeting, we actually held two separate meetings. One was a joint meeting with the planning commissioner and the Parks and Recreation Commission, and the second one was the regular planning commission that succeeded that, that did not precede, succeeded that meeting. And we have the minutes from both of those meetings in our packet tonight. And this second item on the consent agenda is just in a time extension, 17-003, for a tentative parcel map, 7-002, an older project that has come up with a renewal request. Do I have any comments from my fellow commissioners on either one of these items?
Yes, Chair Martin. On the public hearing item for the Planning Commission, item 8, the lot merger and architectural review. The two lots, it was 9A, at the very bottom, at the end, under the action, for the yeas and noes, I want it to be real clear, I voted no, and it was Fowler Payne that voted yes, so if you can switch those two names around.
You're absolutely correct, we'll make that change.
Thank you for catching that. Any other comments on either one of these items? Hearing none, can we get a roll call vote, please?
Well, we need to make a recommendation first, and I'll go ahead.
Excuse me, I'll make a recommendation that we approve the minutes of June 20th, 2017, first action for the Planning Commission, as noted with the correction. And then I also move to approve the minutes for the Parks and Recreation Commission as well.
For that joint meeting.
For that joint meeting.
A second.
Okay, we have a first motion and a second for item 7A. We can have a roll call vote.
Commissioner Mack?
Yes.
Commissioner Fowler Payne?
Yes.
And Chair Martin?
Yes. Okay, for item 7B, then I'll entertain a motion that we approve that or recommend that extension.
I have a question of staff.
Okay.
On extensions, how many extensions are you allowed per application?
So you're allowed to apply for, under our municipal code, up to 3 one-year time extensions. So this project has been kept alive as a result of all the state extensions that were enacted through the Great Recession.
But is this the first extension they're asking for? Or the?
Yes, it is the first extension. I believe that's reflected in the resolution in front of you tonight.
Okay. Very good.
How long were the state mandated extensions for? How many years did they approve them for?
Depends on which one you're referring to. There were a number of them, I believe, up to 5 in total. Most of them were good for 24 months each time with certain cutoff dates and requirements that needed to be met. So we take a look at all of the maps and extensions on a case-by-case basis.
So they overlap long enough to give them that time period?
Correct, yes.
Last question. It is a tentative map, not a vesting map, correct?
Correct.
I have no other questions. Thank you. extension of item 7B, consideration of time exception extension on 17-003, 1 year time extension for tenant parcel map 07-002 and plan unit development of 07-002 in accordance with the Subdivision Map Act. The location is 166 Pine Street.
And a second?
I'll second.
Could we have a motion and a second on this second consent item? Maybe a roll call, please.
Commissioner Mack?
Yes.
Commissioner Fowler Payne?
Yes.
And Commissioner Martin?
Yes. These two consent items have passed. We'll move on now here to the public hearings. We have one item here tonight under consideration of conditional use permit 17-004, establishment of a new wine tasting room at 134 West Branch Street. Can we get the staff report at this point? Thank you.
Yes, good evening, Commissioners. So as you said, this is the consideration of conditional use permit 17-004, establishment of a new wine tasting room in an existing commercial at 134 West Branch Street. So this property is located over in the Village West Center, zoned Village Mixed Use. It is included in the D2.4 Historic Character Overlay, and surrounding land uses are retail, restaurants, and other office spaces within that center. So the proposed project is the establishment of a new wine tasting room on behalf of True Wines Incorporated, and then they will also be establishing some new outdoor seating where there's currently just concrete, and a few minor ADA improvements as well. So this is the site plan of the project. In the bottom right of the sheet, you can see the layout of the proposed wine tasting room and the additional outdoor seating area proposed in front, surrounded by new planting barriers. They will also be renovating the bathroom there in the back to conform to ADA standards. So the VMU district, the primary purpose is to provide for a mixture of commercial, office, and residential uses compatible with surrounding residential districts in small-scale pedestrian-oriented developments. An alcoholic beverage sales use is permitted with the approval of a conditional use permit. Access to the property is currently off of Branch Street, and then the parking lot for the Village West Center is located off of Wesley and also provides access. The project will be parked using the two parking spaces provided by the Village West Center parking lot for their 577.5 square feet of accessible space. There will be minor landscaping and ADA improvements. As I mentioned before, there will be new planters around the outdoor seating to screen it a little bit, but no other changes proposed to any of the landscaping, and then the minor bathroom renovations to conform with ADA standards. This project did go to the Staff Advisory Committee on June 14th. Building and fire had some occupancy and fire safety issues that we've corrected with the applicant since, and they're now in support of the project. In regards to environmental review, the project is categorically exempt due to Section 15301A of the guidelines regarding existing facilities. The project was properly publicly noted. Notices were posted in the Tribune, City Hall, on the website on July 7th, and the project sign posting went up on July 6th, and the agenda and staff report were all posted in accordance with city code. We received no comments from the public in regards to this project. So staff's recommendation is for the Planning Commission to adopt the resolution approving conditional use permit 17-004, and I am happy to answer any questions that you guys have of staff at this time.
Thank you. Are there questions for staff before we have the applicant make their presentation?
None for me.
I have one. The area calculations that you had for the two parking spaces, did that area calculation include the outdoor seating area?
That is correct, yes. Outdoor seating area was counted when contributing towards parking.
Okay, thank you. That's all.
Thank you. I do have a question that's kind of related to that outdoor parking. Outdoor seating. I'm wondering if the outdoor seating was included in part of that original development plan, because, having designated outdoor seating is a little bit of unusual. I know that it's desired within the city, particularly within the village zone, but I'd just like a little more background on that, why this specific tenant is being granted this kind of outdoor seating, or reserved outdoor seating. The applicant may have some additional information from the property owner granting that right, but I'm curious about that.
Sure. So in my review of the history of the center, in my time with the city, my understanding is the shops that do front Branch Street did have that front patio area, not necessarily assigned per tenant space, but calculated as part of the overall center's parking calculations in order to accommodate that change of use over time. So to answer your question, yes.
Because I know that the prior tenant, I think, was Alfie's Coffee House or something along that line, and then they were able to expand their outdoor seating area, you know, into that particular area to do that. But suddenly having planters isolating, you know, that is kind of a reserved space, just made it look a little different to me. I just want to get that clarification.
Yeah, absolutely. And that the applicant can speak more to this, but when you have alcohol consumption on the exterior of the building, you have to have permanent fixed gate-type situations, similar to when the Planning Commission reviewed beer and wine sales at Starbucks and they had to put the gates up or the fencing up. So it's a very similar concept to that.
Okay, very good. The other question I had is when I was reading through the conditions under the advantages, it talked about the proposed use will provide additional wine tasting location in the village. And then I noticed and said, I wonder how many other wine tasting businesses are currently there in the city. And it looked like it had been answered under disadvantages that there are currently two other existing. Are there two currently other existing permitted wine tasting, or are there more than two? So this will be the third?
Yes, in staff's knowledge, you have Tambor, which was approved by the Planning Commission about 6 months ago, and then Phantom Wines as well operating. So this will be the third wine tasting space to exist in the village corridor here off of Branch.
I just want to make sure we had, you know, the public and we all had a clear understanding of how many of these wine tasting businesses were emerging or existed within the city. Those are the only questions I have at this time. Thank you. I'm wondering if the applicant is being granted some time in order to make their presentation.
Chair, members of the commission. My name is Kevin Bates. I'm a local architect here in town, representing Bob Lindquist here, the appellant. First off, I'd like to thank staff for their assistance in the application process, planning staff and building staff. Secondly, we've reviewed the conditions. We don't have any concerns at this time. We are more than happy to answer any questions. In regards to the planters, it's a response to ABC. We're required to have a designated secure area that if there's any outdoor seating, we need to be able to quickly control that. And that's an attempt versus putting in a permanent railing. We came with a softer approach with planters.
And I'm assuming there are signage of some kind of no alcohol beyond this point or something like that is required by ABC.
Yeah, ABC will require the signage, but this is an attempt to not do just a standard railing. It's to soften it up, make it look quite nice.
Very good. Thank you. Questions from the commission to the applicant here tonight?
With the wines that you're offering, is it just from a single winery, or are you offering a collage, a host of different wines?
It will be wines from Verdad Wine Cellars, and the winery permit will be alternating with Coupe Wine Cellars, the wines that my husband makes. So it'll be just the two brands that's kind of in the family. So Verdad and Coupe.
Okay, so it's preparatory to the wines that you're offering.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
I have none.
I guess while I'm on that subject, is there going to be any food?
No food, is except for maybe crackers to clear your palate. We might apply for an occasional one-day catering permit if we have some kind of release party or something like that. Or sometimes the Slow Wine Association will have events twice a year, and they'll offer specials in tasting rooms, and a lot of tasting rooms offer food that day. So it might be a couple few times a year that we would apply for a conditional catering permit for that.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. I have no questions of the applicant at this point.
Thank you.
public is this is a public hearing. If there are people from the public that wish to speak on this item and have questions of either the staff or the applicant, now is the time to come forward. Seeing no one, we will close the public comment and public hearing portion of this. We have a recommended action that we adopt a resolution approving the conditional use permit. I wonder if there's any other questions or issues or comments the commissioners would like to make before taking this action. Commissioner?
Well, I just, you know, in discussion, I think it's appropriate use. Anytime we can bring the public eating, conversation, gathering in the plazas and outside. Alfie's is doing wonderful, you know, that number of the restaurants where they can just open up the doors and feel like you're part of the cityscape. It's a plus. I think it's going to add and be attractive to our downtown area, our downtown core, as opposed to retail sales or a surf shop, if you will, or dresses. I think that's a really good use for the patio. My concern is alcohol and with, you know, children and this, that, and the other thing, but it's going to be self-contained. It's fenced in with planters. I think they did a good job. So, and I don't hear any resistance from the public. They're offering individual wine. That's from their winemakers. So, in terms of being competitive with the other two wineries or other two wine tasting rooms, I don't see that happening at all. The more diversity we can have for the public, the better. I think it's a good addition.
Thank you. What's your comment?
I have no comments.
I'm also in support. I don't have any additional comments. We don't need to delay this, I think, any more than it needs to. I agree with Commissioner Mack. I think this would be a fine addition to the village and that end of of Branch Street. With that being said, I entertain a motion to approve this resolution. Do I hear one?
I'll make the motion to approve a resolution of the Planning Commission of the City of Rio Grande approving Conditional Use Permit 17-004, establishment of a wine tasting room and existing commercial structure located at 134 West Branch Street, applied for by True Wineries, Inc.
And a second. I can't, but I'm just...
I'll second it then. You just keep looking at me and I'm like...
I do.
Okay, are you not...
We have a motion and a second. Can we have a roll call vote on this, please?
Commissioner Mack?
Yes.
Commissioner Valentine?
Yes.
Chair Martin?
Yes. This item passes 3-0. Public hearing items are now ended. Our next item is a non-public hearing item. It's a consideration of a draft initial study and mitigated negative declaration for the James Way Oak Park Habitat Wildlife Preserve Trail Addition. We can have a staff report on this now. Thank you.
Okay, good evening, Chair Martin, Commissioners Mack and Payne. My name is Chris Magdoscu. I'm the Public Works Director for the City of Rio Grande. I'm pleased to bring this to you tonight for consideration of the CEQA clearance. That's something that we have to do as part of the process to clear this project, so I'm excited to bring this to you. Quick bit of history and housekeeping. This has come to the Parks and Rec Commission twice. Earlier in January, it's kind of a lightweight proposal to get direction, came back in April with an approval, and a technical memorandum was approved, which kind of set the place for the environmental clearance. So that's what we're going to do. We're not really approving a project. It is conformance with the general plan, but we can entertain some questions if they happen to come up. I do have Cindy Cleveland here tonight, who is the biologist who also prepared the mitigated neg deck for us tonight for consideration. So she's the professional on some of the items in there, but I'll highlight some of this as I get to the staff report via the PowerPoint. Quick piece of information here where we're at. As you know, James Way Preserve is anchored in between some residential area there up at James Way. You've got Oak Park on the far left, and it's about 75 acres of land, quite large. It was part of Tract 1994, and there was an open space agreement, and then not too long after that, we actually got the property deeded over to us. It is zoned planned development, and that's a part of what it is. And under the land use, the general plan is a conservation open space. A little detail here of additional information. Developer built it. We maintain it. Volunteers help maintain it as well. There's some cool habitat there, the coast live oak, as we all know, California grassland, royal willow, sagebrush, and there's some wetland in this area. I will actually, at the end of this, run a drone video with some cool music that'll show where the trail is going to go. That'll kind of help paint the picture of the design of the trail as it meanders through. And so thanks to the Clevelands for providing that to me. Numerous flora and fauna. There's Cooper's hawk as well, been spotted out there. I have yet to see it, but I can't wait to go out there and check it out. General plan objectives. Couple of them here. Plan for a well-maintained system of footpaths and non-vehicular trails that provide access to areas of non-urban development. This is right out of the general plan. Under the conservation open space element and under the parks and rec element, we encourage a network of recreational trails, bike lanes, and bikeways should be established for use by local residents and in the area as well that come to visit. The amenities, quickly. We have a working windmill, information kiosk, solid waste receptacles or trash cans, 2 miles of hiking, walking trails. This will add about 3/4 of a mile or so, plus or minus. And some pedestrian bridges, drainage facilities. Here's a couple of photos of the bridges that are out there that lead from James Way onto the property. And some of the trails that meander through, some a little wider than this, some a little narrower than this. And a couple of just other miscellaneous photos of the drainage facilities and some of the signage we have warning people to not enter a certain area that's sensitive. Here's one of the kiosks where I personally would like to add another one out there, but that's not a part of tonight's consideration. And the proposed trail, a little hard to see probably on the graphic, but I'll have it'll be better when you see the drone video because you'll actually see how it goes through. But there's a proposed trail that's mislabeled as a 0.58 miles, moved around a little bit as they had to kind of redirect the design. That's a little between the existing trail, but you can see the red. If you can see the red, that's the proposed trail. So it's a little offshoot, and it'll bypass some area, then come around and connect back on the other side. So it's almost a parallel trail, but it gives opportunity of a little more of a hiking experience along the hillside. The CEQA document has, as you know, it has to address a menu of items. Fortunately, this is really straightforward. Didn't have a lot of items to be mitigated. There are only really two types of items. The biological resources, there are 5 mitigation measures identified, and for cultural resources, 2. The 5 under biological address the flora and the fauna and the species that are out there, and then under the cultural resources, it addresses the Chumash or any other archaeological artifacts that could be found while doing the surface prep and trail construction. And those are outlined in your staff report. We can hit those later if you have questions. In conclusion, this is a community amenity. This will help provide for additional recreational opportunities. It maintains habitat protection and wildlife viewing. It enhances both of those, actually. And it adds trails to enhance the preserve. And it kind of creates the health and wellness aspect of it. Gives us another opportunity to hike and walk. And it's consistent with the general plan, of course. So, recommendation is to review the draft document and make a recommendation to the City Council to adopt the mitigated neg deck, instruct the City Clerk to file an NOD, and approve the trail design improvements from the standpoint of how it meanders through the preserve. I will say thank you. I can take questions and some public comment now, unless you'd like to see the drone video. Be nice?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, let's see the drone video first.
That way it helps frame the reference of everything. That might help.
Right. And this is a non-public hearing item, but even though the crowd is relatively small, people wish to speak. I'm going to give the opportunity for people to come up and ask questions. Having the biologist here may be helpful as well to hear from her about, comments or things that we are missing here. Let's go to this video.
See if there's a
walked this trail about 7 times to get this drone video, and he actually had the drone follow him as he's walking through, so you might see him. And this, so this is exactly almost where the trail will be.
So once you maybe see a lot of trees, it's going to be underneath the trees. So
thank you very much.
Very specifically clear on that. Okay. Roll. Look for flags. You might see some flags as well. Thank you.
Payne, do you have any questions?
When you said non-vehicle trail, but this calls out that it's for bikes. Where we had the item presented to us that wasn't an item on our agenda last time about the, what do we call that, bike park?
Yeah.
What is going to keep them from, you know, just getting on their bikes and running all around this trail and back to where they started?
Nothing. I know that the preserve doesn't preclude riding of mountain biking. I've heard that bike riders use it. What it precludes is, or prohibits, is unauthorized uses that are not approved versus a trail. So the bike park is illegally created ramps that haven't been approved yet, right? Versus a trail that you can ride on. But I don't know if Cindy has any background in discussions with the volunteers on that abuse, but this is going to be a somewhat narrow trail. I know it does prevent a challenge if you have a really narrow trail and you have a bike on it, but we've periodically got out there to verify that there's no offshooting of the trail. Sometimes mountain bikers like to go a different direction. They may use one trail and shoot off. But right now, our intent is to hopefully that there won't be any negative impacts on that to the biker.
I'm familiar with the existing trail, the trail before had just gone from one end to the other and back, where now with the bike park out there, I just thought that might open up the availability for them to, once they're through doing their jumps or whatever they do, to get on that trail and speed on there when you've got people walking on there. And like you said, it is narrow. I walked on it before. And then I don't know if there's any way to restrict that or if there can be a sign posted that it's, you know, not used for bike racing or whatever they want to call it. The other thing is, what is this costing the city to put this in? I know it said volunteers, but you've got all of these impact the reports that have to be prepared or that have to be repaired on the for the biologists and the arborists and all those, where does that fund come from to pay them?
We have a contractual services account in Public Works that helps pay for consultants, and Cindy and any other individual would be paid out of that account. The whole idea is to have a pre-construction meeting with the volunteers, with the group or groups, or maybe more than one, you know, could step up. Cindy would come on attend that for a couple hours. Would be a cost on that. Staff's already there, so it's kind of a part of our normal working day. And if any issues arise in the field during construction or we want to observe some of the work around the oak trees, then obviously she'd go out. But that's not a lot of impact. That would be part of the consultant services agreement.
So what was the dollar amount other than this $3,400 expenditure coming out of Public Works funds?
Yes.
Do you have any idea how much the total amount of this facility is going to be?
I cannot remember what estimate that Cindy provided, or at least provided on the upfront pre-construction. It's a lot less than this because this was a full document. There was a technical memo done. There were some other meetings done. So that dollar amount might be higher than what it'll actually be at the end of the day during construction. 4 to 8 weeks of work, I'd say it's going to be, I don't want to speak for Cindy's billing rate, but it's going to be under $1,000 probably, or in that ballpark. But again, considering how much we expend on consultant services for designing some of our projects, you know, we're up in the $40,000 and $80,000 ranges, and those come out of our design fees, project fees. But it's a small dollar. We think the dollar amount is so low it outweighs the benefit and the value of the fact that volunteers are going to build it. Staff just kind of keeps an eye on it, and it's working now. But I can get a harder number and put that together in time for if City Council asks about it, too, and then I can get that back to you.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Awesome.
Okay, great, thank you. Commissioner Mack.
first started off, it was my understanding that the Planning Commission was here to review the draft initial study in the negative deck for the trail. And I thought your first statement was, is there's not a design yet, there's no drawings. But then the second part of this motion, which I'm confused about, says make a recommendation to City Council to adopt the MD and to approve the trail design improvements. But I don't see anything to approve.
It was the conceptual idea of the fact that it is meandering through what you saw on the video and in what's outlined in the staff report with the red dash line, because it's going to be a field fit that's got flags out there. But if they encounter something, and once they remove the poison oak and there's something in the way, they got to move something over a little bit, it'll be some field fit. So that's kind of the as-built situation. But that's what was meant by the trail design. It was just the idea of itself meandering through the preserve in conformance with the general plan.
Because even if we don't know where exactly it's going to go, and it's going to be meandering, and it's going to use the biologist to determine the best route, it'd still be nice to approve a cross-section of what the width's going to be and approve. Is it pedestrian only, or is it pedestrian and cyclist? You know, when I think trail, I'm thinking Bob Jones Trail. And you see little kids with bikes and whatnot, and I just want to make it real clear to the City Council what it is we are approving and who's going to be using that trail and what the width is. And is it DG? Is it, you know, what was it made out of as well?
Cindy, my understanding that the trail was going to just utilize existing earth materials that were there. There was going to be no imported material, correct? Because the dirt. So it was basically a balanced site, if you will. And any excess, if they needed to haul it away, they'd get rid of the soil and maintain the same soil. And I think the trail was 3 to 4 feet wide in that range, but that was just generally what I have seen on the initial discussion points in the office. But I haven't actually seen a schematic. Yeah.
So is the individual here who did the MND here?
Yes, that's
because I do have a couple questions,
sir,
just regarding that document.
Sure, definitely.
Cindy, do you mind, you know, just stepping up here to the microphone? Thank you.
Thank you.
Cleveland, El Rio Grande.
Thank you, Cindy. So, with this, are you processing the permits with Fish and Wildlife as well, or?
One is not needed.
One additional is not needed?
No. And I did not find any Pismo clarkia, even though it's in the area, but I took out two separate botanists out there, and who are very familiar with the plant, just to cover my tracks, and we didn't find it anywhere, and we did a study during the blooming period.
So on, under biological resources, I'm on Roman numeral 4. D, it talks about interface substance with the movement of any native resident or migratory fish or wildlife species or with established native resident or migratory wildlife corridors of feed. Okay, so my question here is it says it's less than significant with mitigation. Is that specifically for a particular bird or species of wildlife? Because the next one, to me, E, probably has something to do with the trees.
Yes. So we're nearing the end of nesting bird season, and it's just a general mitigation for most projects, even if we remove or do work underneath a tree. So there might be some migratory birds going through, and there might be some nests there. But you just kind of walk through and you see if there's any birding nests. If there are, you just put a little, you tell everybody not to work around that nest. Depending on if it's a raptor or not, it might be a little wider of a buffer around it. So it's, I've walked it tons of times. I haven't seen any nests in the area. But.
And then the E, I'm just guessing it's the tree. Can you elaborate on that? Were there any other biological resources that needed to be mitigated?
Well, the Pismo clarkia was a big one, and then there are a lot of oak trees out there, as you can see. It's wonderful north slope habitat. And they're pretty dense, and, you know, as you're going through there. So we're going to just build the trail as far away from the drip line as possible. But in some areas, it's 100% cover. So we'll just have to work through there and stay as far away from the root system. And we're not going to expose any roots. They're going to be just scraped away the dirt right there. So there should be no impact.
Yeah, because you're really not going to be digging. I mean, it's not like you're going to be.
No.
Which brought me to my next question, the cultural resources. There's really no issues regarding archaeological resources? Or did you have to do a phase one and have an archaeological
representative? No. There's, from past reports, there's nothing out there. And I talked to a local archaeologist just, you know, to make sure. And he said there's, because of all the oak trees, I was thinking there might be a site there. But he said if anything, they would be passing through this area. But there was nothing there. Yeah, nothing in the record. So.
I was just curious of what those resources were, because it's really generic here, but you would know more specifics.
The biological resources or the cultural?
Both.
Yeah, the cultural, you might find some flakes, you know, if they're, anytime I find oak trees, then I look for a source of water. So if there's water nearby in oak trees, especially in spring, the Indians would hang around there, and you might see where they're grinding the oaks, or if there's a source of material to make a chert or to make like an arrowhead, something like that, I'll look for flakes. Over here, I haven't really seen anything. I mean, there is a drainage down below. And I also look for the high areas. Like, if the Chumash would go up there and kind of look over the Rio Grande Creek and hunt and fish down in there. There were lakes in that area, actually. Yeah. So, in talking to the archaeologists, there was nothing, of significance up there. And no, like, flat, rocky areas where they would be hanging out next to a spring. That's where I see it. Just passing through when they're hunting. As far as biological, there are some, the Cooper's hogs. I do see badgers, evidence of badgers. And down in the wetland area, if we were working down there, that's a whole nother ballgame. Then you're dealing with red-legged frogs and, you know, many different species that would use the wetlands, especially the red-legged frog. We're far away from that. There's no way there's going to be any red-leggeds up there. So the only really concern are, like, the silvery legless lizard, where you rake for that. When they rake, you could see it, and it runs away. That's just a sensitive species. It's not a listed. So that was a big one. And then the Pismocarkia, which is listed as a federally endangered species, and it's not on the site. And then the nest. So there's really not a lot, because it's upland from the wetland. And then there could be some badger dens, but I haven't seen any evidence of that there.
So when it comes to the trail itself, what is the actual width of this trail? Or is it varying all over? Or is it?
Yeah, about 3 feet. And talking to I can't remember off the top of my head.
Eric? Volunteer?
Yeah, talking to the volunteers who are amazing. And they're the ones who are out there maintaining those trails and making sure everything looks nice. Not the people who built the bike ramps. This is a different organization, and they're the ones out there clearing the trail and making it nice. So I think they will protect it from, you know, people going off trail, because they're the ones pushing this project, and they're doing it all by volunteer. So, and they're following. They've all had training on trail building for this area, so they're following the standard protocol.
So here goes my next question, and it could be for both of you. Obviously, when you build it, they will come. They're going to start using it. So one of my concerns is cutoff routes, and not from bikes, but from people, because once it's there, they know it's there, and then maybe parking in the commercial parking lot and making their own path down to this trail. Is it any comfort you can give here? Is it? Because I haven't walked it. Is it vertically challenging to do that? Is there poison oak? Can you make it challenging so it reduces that cutoff?
Nobody's going to want to cut off this trail.
Okay.
The poison oak in some places was up to here. Yeah, it was pretty intense. there's a lot of oak. And if there's no oak, there's thistles. So, yeah, I don't see that being a big concern. And it's steep. The trail that's there right now is close to the wetland. And in the winter, it floods. So we want to get people away from it. And it's a heavily used trail. So there is a little bit of a steep of a climb, and then it kind of goes up to the top, and then it drops back down.
And I didn't even have the concern until I saw the flyover video where it got really close to the commercial parking lot, and that kind of, I said, oh, if those guys start parking there and want to cut down to the trail.
Yeah, you can't see the trail from there. That went a little bit further, closer to the parking lot. He kind of went up a little bit. But when you walk the trail, and I've looked at it from the parking lot, you can't see it at all.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Yes, and I walked the existing trail, Commissioner Mack, and actually when I saw the flags from, now you see it from the three-dimensional standpoint, and I saw the grade that comes up, this is going to be an interesting hike. And with the narrowness, because we walked long enough where I learned a lot from Eric that they've been very lucky here of having people not go off trail. I mean, other than the bike park situation, this has been fairly well watched, and they fix things right away. You know, if there's an area that gets rutted out, they'll beef it up. So I think this will be a very successful trail that people that aren't as in good of shape are probably not going to want to see. But I think that from what I saw, this will be, maybe people may not even see it. So they'll see it under construction, but I don't know how we're going to promote it yet. We haven't really gotten into that level of detail, but the volunteers have been great, and we have a staff member that's out there all the time, so we'll keep an eye on that.
Fantastic.
Yeah, I'm excited about this.
Well, with the information that you shared, I got a really good comfort level of what kind of trail this is, and with that, when it comes back to commission, I'd like to share my thoughts. Thank you.
Very good. I don't have any additional questions at the time. I think you're pretty well covered. Go ahead, Kevin.
Yeah, I just wondered, I've walked this trail before, but at that time I wasn't paying attention. Are there signs out there for no smoking on these trails? So that, because it is densely covered with foliage, I'd hate to see something.
I can't remember.
I can actually address that.
No. Okay.
So there are signs on the street at every pedestrian entrance on the street that say no smoking in city parks. This is considered a city park. And there are signs out there.
So it's close to where they're getting on.
Correct.
Having just come back from the mountains yesterday, being stuck up there for a week because 166 was closed when I came back through yesterday, you think that it's pine trees or whatever, but they were oak trees, and they were very well charred, so it didn't take long for the fire to move through there. But I just want to make sure that, this is one of our last open space areas in the city, and to have something devastating go through there. That's my only comment.
Any other comments before we make a motion on this?
My comments are, it's clearly to me a walking trail and or hiking trail. I don't see bikes, and if bikes are on this trail, that pedestrians can possibly get hurt, not seeing oncoming mountain bikes, if you will. So I would ask, if it's not in the plan, that it actually be signed that no bikes allowed, or if bikes have to get in there some way to get to the other component that we were looking at a week ago or 2 weeks ago, that they're walking their bikes, that they're not riding them, because I can see that being a danger to the hikers and or the walkers, if you will. I think it's fantastic, and limit it to 3 feet right there tells you that bikes shouldn't be on it. I like to also see, for people who are probably venturing out for the very first time that aren't as physically fit as most, knowing how long it is as you're going, 0.2 mile, 0.5 mile, 0.7 mile to go. You see those up Willow Creek, Plaskett Creek, if you will, Alder Creek. I go hiking up there, and you'll know how much longer it is before you get to the destination. I think that would be helpful for the people that are venturing for the first time. But those are my comments. I think it's a fantastic addition to the city of Rio Grande, and definitely meets up with our general plan. Can't wait.
Okay. Commissioner Fowler-Payne.
I didn't notice anything on here. Is there going to be a pedestrian use on this trail at all? I know you have it right along that frontage of James Way along the...
Probably tough. I do know that I've heard of the equestrian using the wider trail, but I have not addressed that with them on those uses. I'll have to look into that for you.
I was going to say, because there is really no other place for them.
Yeah, it would be it'd be a different experience from the slope, but the angles would be tight. But it doesn't preclude that the use. I know that they said it.
I just didn't notice in the listing of the use of it.
Okay.
So if it isn't going to be included, then I guess that's okay the way it is.
All are encouraged, but it's those that would be doing something illegal or counter to our objectives of the plan.
Okay, very good, thank you. I'll make the motion, but before I do, what I'm going to do is that last 1, 2, 3, 4, those last six words, remove the word improvements and add the word conceptual between the words the and trail. And I think it'll become evident at that point. Is that I move that the Planning Commission recommend the City Council adopt the mitigated negative declaration and instruct the City Clerk to file a notice of determination and approve the conceptual trail design. Or a comma with there's two, I'll say, conditions as were identified by Commissioner Mack, including appropriate no biking signage and mileage markers. I think both of those are appropriate and be helpful on this trip. So I'm seeking a second.
I will second that, and thank you for keeping it really clean. You did really good on that.
Commissioner Martin?
Yes.
Commissioner Mack?
Yes.
Commissioner Fallerfang?
Yes.
And this item passes 3-0.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you. Okay, let's go on to item 10, Notice of Administrative Decisions, and it appears there are none. If I could confirm that with staff?
None this evening.
Very good. And at this point, any... Commission communications?
Well, I'd like to talk about one of the items at the very beginning. I know it wasn't public, but when Kristen came up regarding the lot merger 6 and 7, my concern is notification again. And I guess the question is when this comes back before the Planning Commission, that proper notification does go out, and not only I think the radius needs to be extended to ensure that all the lot owners or potential lot owners are notified, not just the person selling the track and the lots, but also the residential neighborhood that you drive through before you reach this destination needs to be notified.
I can address that last meeting. I had planned to address that under staff communications.
Okay, I can address that. So, if I can just, before you make that comment, sure. To piggyback on that a little bit, I know that in our the motion that we made at the last meeting instructed staff to include that as a public hearing item and notice the public. I totally agree with Commissioner Mack that 300-foot area needs to be extended. However, whatever the footage is to include the entire residential area below that in the Vista Del Mar, whatever the name of that particular development, and that may have been the intention of staff, but this our encouragement or our comments hopefully will confirm that.
Yes, and unfortunately the speaker is no longer here, but not to talk about the project itself, but based on the direction that the Planning Commission provided at the last regular meeting, staff did publish or is publishing a notice in the paper as well as notifying the entirety of the mobile home park and all the residences along Castillo Del Mar and the offshooting streets from that. So, yes, wide notification for that item.
Does it Falcon Ridge subdivision back up to that also? On the
The Falcon Ridge in the county. Terry, I'm sure it's outside of city limits. Does that get included in this type of notification?
We weren't anticipating notifying Falcon Ridge in this. We'll look at opportunities to at least get the nearby adjacent residences.
Although I'm going to say the roadway that has the potential to be connected at some point in the future, at this point is going to be continued to be fenced,
correct,
or terminated. There is no access between that development and this development.
Correct.
Okay, thank you. Are there any other commission communications or staff communications that need to be shared at this point in time?
John, did you go to that on Friday? I wasn't able to go to the, I think I was at HRC on Friday because I was kind of locked in the mountains.
That's
with
good
no
excuse.
Access out for the fire. Can you give us kind of an overlay of what transpired at that?
Sure. The HRC, we've been working with them on doing some of the historic resource surveys here in the village core. So as part of that, we took a look at five different properties that that we've done at least preliminary surveys on. They're called intensive resource surveys under the Department of Parks and Recreation from the state, and looked at some of those. It was what was actually a great idea by Chair Bill Hart of the HRC was we do have a property owner in the village who has expressed interest in having her space designated historic, and we have a couple new HRC members as a part of the group, and so it was his idea that why don't we move forward with that designation and do the that way the group can kind of learn how the typical designation process goes, which I thought was a great idea because originally we were looking at selecting a few of the five to then provide more information on pick one to go off of, but acknowledging that somebody was previously interested in it, we're going to be moving forward with that at the in the future meetings.
Once there, and I think, you know, when you and I had talked, we talked about the city historic. What about the national? Once they're in, I know those, the report said that they didn't qualify for that, but once they're in the city, then would they re-qualify for that if they're?
So you're asking if they're not not eligible under the national, but if we designate them locally, do they then become eligible for the national?
Right.
Not necessarily.
They'd still have to qualify.
They'd still have to qualify. So that is kind of, and the local designation really does have the most, I don't want to say the most teeth, but we monitor based on our municipal code. We require more from projects that are locally designated that want to make any modifications and things like that. So it elevates the review level. It doesn't preclude projects from occurring. Doesn't mean, oh, you can't, never touch this resource. Just means we have to evaluate the impacts associated with that proposal. We're looking at the identification of what resources we kind of want to start ticking away at.
So would that be would the impacts, the requirement impacts, be greater than what we already have now for the historic village guidelines?
Yes. So we do take a look at all discretionary projects we take a look at under CEQA. One of the, as you can see from the MND that you looked at earlier tonight, cultural resources is a part of that, and that's what the local designation really kicks it into. It then becomes a local designated resource here in the city, and therefore you have to analyze under CEQA what the impact associated with a proposal would be. So, for instance, let's say the building that we're in is a locally designated historic resource, and the city came, somebody in the city, probably from Public Works, who you know just does whatever they want to, came in, we want to bulldoze this and put up a parking lot. Well, as part of that project, we would do the environmental analysis on that and determine, okay, you're going to be a significant impact because once you demolish it, you can't get it back, and therefore it would kick it into an environmental impact report and publicly notify and disclose that information. So It does. It elevates that significance threshold.
Okay. Very good. Thank you very much, Mr. Downey.
Has there been any update to our parking?
Why you guys keep asking all the stuff I was going to get to?
Okay.
Teasing. We tentatively have the agreement for the East Grand Avenue Master Plan on the council's agenda for the upcoming Tuesday night's meeting. So it was directed by the council to focus our parking study efforts along with that work program. So we anticipate that going to the council on next Tuesday. After they take whatever action they take, I'll be glad to report back on that.
Thank you. That's it. And at this point, I think the is there any other additional?
One more staff communication. Tentative for the next meeting. As directed by the Planning Commission to bring back a resolution for approval for Lot 6 and 7 at the Heights of Vista Del Mar, and as I mentioned, all of the noticing that we will be doing for that. We also have the development code amendment for the roof decks, and that's taken a little bit longer. We've added to it two additional things. One is the triggering for utility undergrounding at time of building permit. That was an issue that was raised by a member of the public and at a city council meeting, and council directed staff to discuss with this individual. So we're bringing some tentative changes to that. And then additionally, you might have learned at your commissioner's training earlier in the year that as of July 1st, thanks to state law changes, we need to make changes to our accessory dwelling unit ordinance, and a lot of it has to do with parking. So it'll be an uncomfortable discussion, but we're going to get through it, largely because the state is mandating it. So we added those pieces to this ordinance to try and get some of that cleaned up as well. So we anticipate that coming in front of you at the next meeting. And then at the last meeting, Chair Martin had an inquiry regarding utility poles over by the hospital area and associated with the medical office building. Director McDosco and I discussed it. There was existing deficiencies in service over in that area, line sagging, and some older equipment, we'll say, some underperforming equipment. So PG&E was already doing a new pole, so I provided that information to Chair Martin, so I wanted to respond to the rest of the Planning Commission. But all of the new utilities going to the new building will be underground. But it was a pole that needed to go up for PG&E's purposes. So, I think that concludes staff's communications this evening.
And just for clarification, the underground utilities serving the new medical building and the installation of this new / replacement telephone pole on Fair Oaks are two separate independent coincidental projects that to the uninformed public eye could appear to be related but in fact are unrelated.
Correct. The new pole will help to serve the undergrounding utilities, but they are largely coincidental in the fact that this was something that was already going to need to be done by PG&E, and they just happened to be at the same time.
Matt, may I just build on it a little bit? Well, they also did analyze the existing pole that was at the one corner. It wouldn't take the additional load conduit-wise. It wasn't up to par, so they couldn't use the existing pole. But while doing that work, then they noticed the sag and the reliability. They said, well, we can accomplish two or three things at one time with this, and that caused the concern that they are supposed to underground. It's like, no, it's a part of what they do in their franchise. So it creates a little bit of that. But it's I'm looking at a long-term Rule 20A project, which can take a long time, but I've already talked preliminarily with PG&E on including that as a Rule 20 project. If you don't know what a Rule 20 project is, essentially it's a bank account of money that gets set aside that we get every year that goes to undergrounding overhead lines in a certain corridor. It's basically a viewshed corridor. So arterial roadways, collector roadways, high volume, whatever types of roads, this would qualify preliminarily. So I'm going to have that added to our system of network. You just go to City Council, adopt a resolution, adopt a limit, and then we put that in the hopper, and then they work on that design. And so it would be nice if we could get that approved with the other one that's already approved on the rest of Grand, and actually have two Rule 28 projects in the book. So that would take care of that long term. But it takes a long time to get them to do that. But once we get it approved, it's good, because now we've got some answer to tell people if they have questions. So I wanted to build a little bit on that for you.
Very good. That's potentially very, very good news here for the community. With that being said, if there's nothing else additionally that needs to be shared this evening, I adjourn this meeting.